And it's the show. It's our second hour. It's 106. And I'm real excited about the second hour because we have on one of my favorite guests, Eric Garris of antiwar.com. Yes, he's one of those libertarians. We don't always agree with them. We don't often agree with them, but we sure agree with the Libertarians for Peace. And Eric is part of that organization. In fact, he is probably the preeminent member. His website, antiwar.com, is a tremendously valuable resource, and it really is your one stop to learn what is going on in this terrible, terrible war on the people of Iraq. Before I go to Eric, though, I wanted to let our listeners know I had mentioned in the first hour that there was information that Dennis Kucinich is going to begin holding new hearings on 9/11 beginning in September. I tried to find information on the Internet. I couldn't find anything. Gee, there's a surprise. The mainstream media isn't announcing this. But, in fact, a press release was issued last night. Congressman Dennis Kucinich has announced, I'm getting this from Kyle Hentz of the 9/11 Truth, I believe he is from 9/11 Truth Alliance, and or he's part of that organization, 9/11 Truth Alliance and Press for Truth, and he reports that Congressman Dennis Kucinich has just announced that he will begin holding new hearings into 9/11 beginning in September because, quote, the commission final report never resolved certain conflicts. Well, that is certainly saying it mildly. I would say that the commission final report ignored glaring and obvious holes and evident mistakes, including a complete failure to even mention that a building collapsed which had not been hit by anything. That, of course, being Building 7, which, if you look at the video footage of that building's collapse, clearly looks to anyone, even I think any scientist, like it was brought down by controlled demolition. Dr. Bob Bowman made the point last night I thought was very interesting, and we've heard it discussed on a Peter B. Collins show, that the BBC was reporting the building's collapse 20 minutes before it actually came down. We also saw footage of the building's owner, Larry Silverstein, acknowledging on camera that a decision was made to, quote, pull it, unquote. In other words, a decision was made to bring that building down rather than what was reported ultimately in the official 9/11 story, that the building collapsed after having been impaired, impacted negatively by fallout, debris, and what have you, from the original collapses of the first two towers, as a result, allegedly, of having been hit by planes. Well, we will save that for another day, but I think it's a very, very important topic. Right now, though, I wanted to let you know the breaking news, which it appears that there will be more congressional hearings on this critical topic. I, for one, am very pleased. A lot of the congressional hearings, I think, are a waste of time. I don't think they need to have more hearings on the Alberto Gonzalez scandals. We know far more than we need to in terms of what's necessary to impeach Alberto Gonzalez. But this is a hearing. These are hearings we should have on 9/11. Without further ado, though, let's move to our guest, Eric Garris. And Eric, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I appreciate your patience as I kept you on for a few minutes declaiming about 9/11.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Eric, your website, antiwar.com, I think it's the best resource on the Internet for up-to-date information about what I call George W. Bush's war on the people of Iraq. Others refer to it as the occupation of Iraq. Whatever it is, it's really not a war on terror at all, is it?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, what they've done as far as terror, it's now like this big bugaboo. They have words that don't really mean anything specifically, like WMDs, like terror or terrorism. These things are undefined, and they purposely leave them undefined, because that way they can essentially put anything negative into that category. So it's terrorism to the United States government. It's terrorism when an Iraqi father shoots an invading person trying to come through his house. But it's not terrorism when foreigners go onto an into a land that they're not welcome and start killing innocent people.
Absolutely. And the other reason they use these sort of vague, meaningless phrases is because they can say it with a wink and a nod to their conservative base or their right-wing or reactionary base, whatever you want to call it, and then they retain plausible deniability. Well, we never really said that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9-1-1, and he did have weapons of mass destruction. It's just that he had apparently gotten rid of them by the time the war began.
Well, the whole weapons of mass destruction, it's a fake definition, because they have included weapons of mass destruction. It includes World War One era gas, like mustard gas,
right.
And it also includes nuclear weapons. But when you say it to people, they think about nuclear weapons. They don't think about mustard gas or sarin or any of those kinds of things. They think of something that's a real weapon of mass destruction. There is only one weapon of mass destruction, and that's nuclear weapons. And the United States is the number one proliferator of nuclear weapons.
That's Eric Garris, his website, antiwar.com. If you'd like to talk to Eric or you have a question or comment, please give us a call at 899-KRXA. Eric, you're talking about the United States as the nuclear weapon possessor. Are we also a nuclear weapon user?
Well, we're the only country that's ever used nuclear weapons against people.
And we're doing it now, I understand. Are we not using low-level nuclear weapons?
Okay, again, here, you're trying to include something else. I am talking about nuclear bombs.
Okay, you're talking about...
I'm not talking about depleted uranium, and I'm not downplaying depleted uranium, but we don't want to play the same game that they play.
Okay.
Which is to mix lower, you know, essentially things that damage, but are not, like, they don't kill hundreds of thousands of people at one time the way a nuclear weapon does.
And I think that's a very fair distinction, Eric. I appreciate that. My point was merely that we're using weapons that have radioactive fallout and that will result in the near-term future in many, many deaths and diseases if it hasn't already in Iraq.
Well, that's true, but it's not just nuclear. I mean, in the first Gulf War, we used a lot of weapons that were not radioactive, but which were highly toxic, and which produced many, many deaths and lots of disease among both Iraqis and American soldiers. But that is not on the same scale. Again, that is, you know, that kind of nuclear is on the same scale as mass poisoning from war, you know, as opposed to the thing. You know, we can't play into their games as far as what is a real weapon of mass destruction and what we're really threatening now to Iran.
Eric, I accept what you're saying. I have a question for you now then.
Okay.
How do we bring about an end to this horrible situation that we are responsible for?
You're talking about Iraq?
Yes.
Okay. Because there may be more than one situation.
Well, there's a lot.
Situation we're responsible for.
I'm talking about our presence, our occupation of and war on the people of Iraq.
Well, the only thing we can do at this point is get out immediately. The United States has nothing to offer. Iraq is on fire right now. And the United States has nothing to offer but gasoline to pour on the flames. Our very presence is making things worse. And there is no possible way at this point that any continued presence of any kind is going to be beneficial. It is going to be divisive. It is going to produce more violence if we stay, no matter what we're doing. The biggest objection I see these days, especially among a lot of liberal Democrats, is that they say, we can still win.
You know
we
what?
We shouldn't win. That's the whole point. We have no business winning.
Well, we don't even know what winning is. Define
win. We have no business staying.
Eric, define win. We don't. What is winning? What would it be? I guess they're saying a peaceful, democratic Iraq.
If you even take their fantasy world of win, which would be a peaceful, democratic Iraq, we should not be doing that. We should not be enforcing peace, democracy, or anything else on a country that doesn't want our help.
Well, it's sort of a chicken and an egg.
Anyway.
It's a chicken and egg because we can't, because the actions that we took, well, I understand your point, but I would just say because of the way we invaded that country under false pretenses with greed aforethought, we could never bring about a good result for the people of Iraq by our military presence there.
Well, that's true, but I don't think that we could have. I don't think there was a way to do it where it wouldn't have produced negative results, and I don't think there was a way to do it where it would not have been immoral.
I agree. I think there's no question. It's just so obvious, isn't it? I mean, is this a debatable point even?
It's very, very difficult. I mean, I'd like to have some of these presidential candidates in front of me, and I'd like to ask them, how can you say you want to bomb, possibly nuke Iran, if they complete building a reactor, because we can't let them have one nuclear weapon when we have 10,000 and other allies of ours surround them with nuclear weapons? I mean, it's just absurd.
It's so absurd.
The absurd thing is to be able to say, we want you to treat us differently than we treat you. That never works.
Well, it doesn't work. It's also so counterproductive. I mean, what we're saying is we can boss you around and lord it all over you, and that's the best thing for you and for us. And it's ridiculous. It's the worst thing for both of us.
And if you listen to, say, the Democratic debate, you'll see that people, most of the candidates, certainly all the major candidates, are arguing about the best way for us to run other countries' affairs. What works best for us to interfere?
But yeah, we should
be interfering
out.
In the first
Why
place.
Don't we get our? You know what? We should get our troops out of Iraq. We should get them out of West Germany. We should get them out of Korea. We should get them out of Japan. You know, I've kind of gone back and forth on the Korea situation. I mean, that's a scary circumstance because you've got a communist country, you've got a military dictatorship that probably would fill the vacuum there. And I think we'd have
that's totally wrong. I mean, the fact that we're there is what has kept North Korea in power all this time.
Well, that's a debate for another time.
Okay.
We can agree that we should be out of Iraq. We can agree we should be out of Germany and NATO, I think. I don't think there's any dispute, is there, Eric, between us?
I have a modest proposal.
Please.
Not that modest, but regardless of how you feel about the U.S. intervening in terms of humanitarian intervention, in the long run, as a principle, I think everybody can agree that our record over the last 60 years has been abysmal. No matter what our supposed reason for going in, it's always a lie, and it always produces the wrong results, both for them and us.
You know,
in the long run,
you can go back.
My proposal,
go ahead,
is a 50-year moratorium on all foreign intervention by the United States.
I want to think about it. It sounds good. You know, you look back in the early 50s, I mean, I was thinking about this, the situation in Iran, where we toppled a popularly elected official, president, installed the Shah, and that, you know, has had ramifications to the current day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most Americans are not even aware of that. Iranians all remember that.
Of course.
Another thing Iranians remember that Americans don't is when the U.S. accidentally shot down an Iranian airliner, killing 300-some Iranians on board when they were in their own airspace.
Yeah, that's right.
And we never apologized for it. We never compensated them. And yet we continue to attack them for things that they did in 1979, seizing the embassy.
I wanted you to spend the last few minutes talking about how badly this surge, unquote, is going.
Well, of course it's going badly. I mean, there is no way that we are going to win, and they know that. If you listen to what they say, they realize that the best thing they're hoping for at this point is a draw. And if you go back to 1967 and look at the discussions that have now been declassified and are available, of the Oval Office discussions in the Johnson administration, By 1967, they had come to the same position in Vietnam. There was no way to win. The best they could hope for would be a draw, and that would only happen if they sent in another 500,000 troops, which they didn't. This is the same sort of thing. Back then, everybody was saying, well, if we get out precipitously, it's going to be a disaster there. People are going to never trust the United States when it comes to foreign policy. It'll be bad for our image. All the same arguments, including they'll come. The domino theory was essentially a version of they'll come and get us here. But, I mean, there was certainly things happened after Vietnam fell. It was a violent situation, and we are certainly very responsible for a lot of that violence. But had we stayed, it would not have improved the situation. It would have just prolonged it, and more people would have died. And the same thing is going to happen with Iraq. And what's going to happen? We're not, everybody's talking now about September. Everybody's going to turn around and say, well, enough is enough. We got to get out. I wish that was true. I know that it's not.
No, it's not. In fact, what the Republicans are going to do, they're going to come out and say, well, it's because of these deadlines that all the spike in violence. They all did this. The Al-Qaeda deliberately engaged in additional violence to make us scared and try to pull out.
Right, but this will go on forever this way. I mean, literally, when they start talking about a 50-year presence in Iraq, It shocks some people, but it doesn't shock me. I mean, we stayed in Germany, we've stayed in Korea. We never leave unless we're forced out.
Antiwar.com is the website. Eric Garris is the guest. Great posting today. I mean, it's tragic, but it's extremely well-researched. It's an outstanding website. Headline Thursday, that's today, 25 Iraqis killed, 21 wounded, several mosques attacked, and you make the point here that, in fact, as bad as this isn't even one of the worst days in Iraq.
Oh, no, actually, this is a pretty mild day for Iraq.
Only 25 killed.
The average deaths, we've been following them, the average has been about 165 per day over the last few months.
Oh, gosh. Eric, let's just talk a little bit. I got a few more minutes with you. I wanted you to tell us how your libertarian philosophy, background, what have you, has informed your anti-war, pro-peace activism.
Well, I see government as something that interferes with people's rights to live their life, and it should be minimal. It should be limited to things, to protecting people's rights and to providing basic defense and courts and that sort of thing. But that's not, I don't want to get into arguing libertarianism, but the root of that is war is the most egregious thing, the worst violation of somebody's rights that you can have. Killing them, violence against them, and the state, that's their biggest weapon. And so anti-war is a way of reining in the power of the state, and that's why it's compatible with libertarianism.
Well, I think you might even go so far as say compatible. It's actually mandated.
Well,
absolutely. By
and another aspect is that people need to take responsibility for their own lives, and people should not interfere with the same rights of others. And that's definitely what we do when we go into other countries and start telling them what they can or cannot do. We do that with every country that there is. Yesterday, we came and said, we don't like the way Nepal is setting up their new parliament. They have to exclude the Maoists. So we have an opinion about every single dispute and country in the world, and we are not afraid to throw our weight around when it comes to any one of them.
That's Eric Garris. Eric is of antiwar.com. He is just one of the most knowledgeable and well-informed people on the war on the people of Iraq, as I prefer to refer to it as. Eric, I want to have you back on soon, and I'm going to ask you to hold on after I go to the break because I want to talk to you briefly off the air.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's the show.